Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The Wake Up Call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, boys and girls. How is everybody doing today on what seems to be a very nice Sunday, April 25th? Is that right, Sean?
25th.
And 2010 flies along.
Hey, can I give a shout out, Rick?
I don't know. Is this the boombox? Fire away, Sean McCord.
Just want to say happy birthday to my dad. It was his birthday yesterday, and if I gave him proper instructions over the phone, he's listening in on his laptop in Phoenix right now.
Well, happy birthday, Mr. McCord. I'd like to give a shout out to Sean McCord for covering for me last week.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, Rick.
Yeah, and I hear that was a good show. Very interesting conversations about
the living wage campaign at UVA.
Wage pay raise at the University of Virginia and in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area.
We can only hope.
And also a big shout out to Sean McCord, who has brought in our guest for the day, Congressman Tom Perriello. Congressman?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
See, I didn't like how that sounded at all. Although, why in the world do things work when you test them and then don't work when you want them?
Do we need to get a little closer there, Rick?
I don't know. We'll try, or he may need to use your mic. Why is that? It's always, always, always the case with me and this mixer board. Congressman?
Yes, sir.
We may need to switch microphones.
Okay. Hold on here.
We'll just do
it. Rick, just vamp for a minute, would you?
Yeah, because I'm so talented. So, Congressman Tom Perriello will be with us. He is the congressman for the 5th District of State of Virginia at the federal level. That's how far we've gone up, is to the federal level with Congressman Tom Perriello, 5th District, on committees, transportation and infrastructure, as well as veterans affairs. And today, one of the bigger votes during your time period on health care reform. And that's what we'll be discussing with the congressman. All right. Switch of seats. Did that help any?
We'll have to see, but I'm looking forward to the conversation ahead here on a Sunday morning. Sorry to get in the way of the bluegrass.
I know. Rusty does that every week. He's like, already your time to be here? All right, well, let's move forward and continue on. Again, Rusty, do you know why that darn thing doesn't work? We sat there and played with it for 50 minutes before we started and had it up and running, and then the congressman sits down. Maybe it's because the mechanics are fearful of what you might say in this hour.
Or it could just be that when you get the federal government involved, things start falling apart.
All right. Thumbs up and a big bonus point for Congressman Tom Perriello. Stepping in and properly joking, as we often do during. But we are going to be talking about health care reform law with the congressman for the hour. Write down the phone number, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We'll be taking calls about 20 after the hour, but we'll give the congressman a chance to say some things and answer a few questions before we get too far along and start taking calls. And again, Sean McCord will be participating, and a big thanks to him for getting the congressman in here. And who did you talk to?
I talked to Jay, who is, are you hearing me at all here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now this mic is working. Well, I talked to Jay, so I want to thank Jay, your scheduler, for making this happen. And this also began with a conversation with Jessica. I guess she's your press liaison.
She's my press secretary, yeah.
Well, she was just great when I first contacted her. She was very excited for the opportunity. And I'd also like to pass on our condolences. I understand that she had a family loss this week.
She did. She lost her mother after a three-year battle with cancer, and just all praying for her and her family, and very nice service, and certainly tough time for her, and all of us who've lost a loved one like that know that there's no easy way to get through it, but we're certainly praying for her.
All right, let me take a moment and thank the theater at Lime Kiln before we get deep into conversation. Support for NRN coming from them today. They are presenting Austin, Texas Crossover Band, the Belleville Outfit on Saturday, May 1st at 7:30 p.m. in Lexington. Complete event information online at theateratlimekiln.com. That's Kiln, K-I-L-N, theateratlimekiln.com. To see the Austin Band Texas Crossover Belleville Outfit. All right, let's fire up and get into conversation with Congressman Tom Perriello. Congressman, I'm sure everybody knows that health care reform was the biggest conversation within the last year, correct?
It's certainly been the most heated one. I think probably the economy has been foremost on everyone's mind in general on ways to get to stop the loss of jobs and then turn that around. But I think certainly in the political context, the issue of health care reform has reached new heights in terms of volume of civic participation.
Let me ask a couple quick questions. You didn't immediately sign on to the plan. When the information came out from the current Obama administration that said, here's what we want to do, pick your sides, tell us what, you know, if you're for or against it, you weren't one of the folks who immediately raised your hand and said, count me in.
Well, I set a number of standards out, but first among them for getting to yes was, what is the impact going to be on a middle-class family of four? What is the impact going to be on a small business owner with 10 or 12 employees? And I think sometimes we can get lost in the macro numbers, will this reduce the deficit by a trillion or not, and forget that the people who've been caught in the system the most over the last couple of decades have been the middle class and small business owners. You know, small businesses pay 18% more for the same insurance that big businesses pay. And they've seen those premiums go through the roof. And small businesses tend to know all their employees. They know their spouses' names, their kids' names. And so for them, it's very personal if they have to cut off insurance or they have to increase the deductible. And then for people who do have insurance and are glad that they have insurance and feel lucky about it, also say, you know, for the last however many years, I've gone in at the end of the year to try to get a raise and all I get is more of my insurance covered. Or holding on to the insurance I have, not because my employer is a bad person, but because that's been their premiums going up. So it's really been the folks in the middle that have been caught. So, you know, I do like the idea of making sure that the most vulnerable among us have coverage. And I like the idea of basic corporate accountability and decency and fairness in terms of insurance practices. But that was the bottom line for me. And this bill is estimated to save about $4,000 for a family of four making $55,000 a year. That's real money. I mean, it may not mean a lot to Wall Street, but back here, $4,000 a year for a middle class family is a lot.
Let's talk about the healthcare law. And when the original iterations, a lot of people were talking about the public option, and that was taken off the table. So, what happened to the public option? You know, from your view in the Congress, and would you have supported the public option had it been in the bill?
Well, the Senate is what happened to the public option. I guess in the quickest answer, I would and did, in fact, vote in the first version that came through the House included an option. And to me, the core of this bill is a basic partnership that says we are going to say everybody's got to take some responsibility here to get insurance. And in return, we're going to make sure that the insurance companies follow basic principles of decency, fairness, and competition. And one element of that would be to force them to have to compete against a Medicare-like option. It actually had broad public support, despite the rhetoric about government-run health care. People in the Senate, I would argue people who were too close to the health insurance companies or had them in their state, fought to get that out of the plan, so it's not in there. However, the basic framework now is one where the competitive element of the exchange, of these insurance companies having to compete in the exchange, having to follow rules like not being able to kick you off insurance when you get sick, are going to apply. So I think there's going to be real competitive pressure, real accountability. There won't be the public option. One of the ironic things, of course, is that some people are saying, using terms like socialism in this context, when in fact this is a dramatic expansion of the private insurance market, not of a government plan. You could have potentially argued that about the public option, but in fact that's not in the plan. What you have is an expansion of private insurance, but within a context where we're making them play by the rules.
Right, but just how does private insurance function in here? I mean, to me it seems like they're a middleman working between your doctor and your health, and you know they're taking money. I'm sympathetic to charges that this really is just a way to subsidize private insurers and a way to get them to support the bill in the first place. What benefit do private insurers add to this process that a public option wouldn't have?
Well, I certainly heard from a lot of doctors who were supportive of reform about how frustrated they are with the status quo, that it's not the doctor and patient anymore. You know, one of them said, in fact, one very close to me said, you know, these people who say we have to protect the doctor-patient relationship have clearly been living in la-la land for the last 20 years. That relationship has been invaded by the insurance companies. What we have to do is restore it, not protect it, because it's already been deteriorated. And that's a lot of what we do here is we put patients back in charge, because when you're an individual customer going up against the insurance companies, you have very little negotiating position. They'll just kick you off the insurance. But if what you're doing is pooling lots of those individuals and small businesses together, then all of a sudden the negotiating power goes back to the patients and the business owners and not to the insurance companies. And here's basically how it works. Think about going out to Sam's Club. If you go to Sam's Club, you've got to have, you know, the membership card to get in, and you're going to start to get things more or less at wholesale rates. Well, what we're saying to every private insurance company in the country is we are going to have 35 million new customers in this grocery store. You can put your product on the shelf. You can put your insurance company product on the shelf in there, and you're going to have all these customers. But you can only put your product on the shelf if you provide basic rules. You can't kick people off insurance. You can't have a lifetime cap when people get sick. You've got to have better appeals process when the insurance claim denies you coverage. You have to provide prevention and wellness, something I worked on. You've got to cover pre- and postnatal care for pregnant women. These are all things that you've got to do to get your product on the shelf. So what we're saying is, whereas the individual has no negotiating power with the insurance companies, when you put enough people together that the insurance companies really want the business, then you can say, here are the rules you're going to play by to be in the grocery store, and then we'll let the private market go from there.
Congressman, you, from what I know, you have had as many or more setups where people can come, the public can come and talk to you, than almost anyone else in the country. You've done dozens, if not broken the triple digit, with sets where people can come to public areas, whether it's been Albemarle County office building or many other places within the 5th District, for people to come and speak with you and listen to you give explanations. And all of us in this room know that as you're speaking, there are some people listening there going, bull, that's not true. How do you make any attempt, if you do make any attempt, to get people to say, look, to have that conversation with someone and try and answer their questions who have little faith in what you're saying or little faith in the healthcare reform that has now been brought to law?
Well, first of all, I mean, one of the great things in our country is you are entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to disagree on policy. You're entitled to, and in fact, there's I think, a civic responsibility to engage based on what you believe. You know, as the old saying goes, you're not entitled to your own facts, though. And I think what's difficult in this debate is there's been a breakdown of things that are accepted as legitimate arbiters of what is true. You know, I was talking to a conservative editor at one of the papers in my district, who all day gets letters to the editor and will write back and reject many of them because he has to make sure they're not making objectively false claims. And he said one of the things that's been more difficult in the last year is no matter what source he cites to people saying I can't print it for X reason, they will not accept the legitimacy. So it's not just the idea that politicians are not trusted. That's probably healthy. But that other sources, the AARP, the AMA, the hospital associations, these are expert groups that have looked at this issue in detail. And also, if they disagree with you, there must be something wrong with them and not yourself. So again, everyone's entitled to their opinion. It is tough to come together. But one of the things we have now that's made it a little easier is that we have a law. You know, I was on a conservative show the other day, and they were bringing up things that weren't in the law. They had been possibly proposed in different pieces of legislation before, but we have something on the books now. We know we're going to close the prescription drug donut hole for seniors. We know that small business owners are getting a tax credit today, retroactive to January 1, covering up to 35% of the premiums they're paying. So we have a lot of small business owners who had been told, you know, scary things about it, and now they're coming in and saying, I'm going to get a 35% tax credit for the premiums that I'm already paying. I'm going to get to buy on exchanges so that I'm not getting the short straw compared to big business. You talk to people who say there's going to be a pre-existing condition pool. There's a place for early retirees between 55 and 64 to go and get insurance. I was just at the coffee shop, and one of the ladies said, you know, I'm on this rule of being able to stay on your parents' insurance till your 26th birthday. That's going to allow me to get insurance and maybe go back and pick up some community college courses. These are real things. These are facts. People are going to see them, and they really like what they see as we move from the sort of hypothetical line to, hey, what's really in this law? I think you particularly see small business owners and seniors starting to say, hey, wait, I like this, and I like this, and I like this.
Do you so many people, there's the group of people who say we shouldn't have done anything. This is all wrong. And then there's a very large but seemingly less vocal group saying we didn't do enough. You promised us so much more, and we didn't get that. I'd like to know your feelings on that, and I'd like to know if you expect the administration on in all three, well, I guess in both groups, Senate and House as one, and then with the presidential administration, to do more. Is this like the first step?
Well, I think it probably is. It's not the first step. I mean, we've done a lot over the years, you know, from before I was born, but it's certainly one of the biggest that we've made and still falls short of the mark in the sense of, you know, some very clear specifics. One that we fought for that was in the original House bill was the ability for Medicare to negotiate cheaper drug rates under the prescription drug plan in Medicare. The Senate took that out, and I think it had everything to do with, again, who donates and who's close to the drug industry on the Senate side. That's something we can go back and keep working on. There's nothing to prevent us from doing that as a two-page bill. The antitrust bill I got through to make sure that the health insurance companies are not exempt from monopoly laws, that's still something that we're moving forward on. But when you look at what we've done, it's massive. I mean, not only are you seeing tens of millions of new of Americans getting health insurance, but more importantly, those who already have it are going to see savings. They're going to have better protections against the insurance company abuses. They're going to have more options for insuring their aging parents. You know, small business owners, it's going to be easier for you to leave a job and start your own business because you're always going to have this place to go where you can buy affordable competitive health insurance because we've set up this grocery store for the private insurance companies. So can you then go in, to go back to the Sam's Club metaphor, and say, okay, well, now we're gonna put a little more protection in there. You've set up the grocery store for those insurance companies to compete, and you can give patients more power over time.
By the way, we're switching from Sam's Club to Markets of Tiger Fuel as okay. Future metaphors. 11:18 here on the Wake Up Call. Congressman Tom Perriello here from the Virginia 5th District, and we are talking about health care reform. Sean McCord here today helping me with some questions because Sean McCord was the person who got the congressman to come in and visit us for a little while. Sean?
Well, we were talking earlier about people who object to the health care law and a lot of misunderstanding about what's in it. So let's tackle one of these questions right up front. Does the health care reform law ration health care, and where can I apply to serve on a death panel?
Oh, that's low.
good time to take a bite of my breakfast. No, it does not ration care. In fact, it expands significantly for seniors in the Medicare program because there'll be no more copayments on any wellness or preventative care visits, with the idea being we actually save money in the system by finding out people are sick earlier in the disease process. So what we want to do is make it easier to encourage seniors to come in and get those checkups. So under Medicare, there's going to be a reduction in or an elimination starting January 1 in those co-payments for seniors.
Real quick, you're not talking about January 1, 2010, because a lot of this doesn't happen until 2012 or 2014, et cetera, correct?
The co-payment issue is January 1st of 2011. So okay. The end of this year, the beginning of next year, that will kick in. The prescription drug thing also goes to 50% closed January of this year. And we also extend the Medicare Trust Fund by a decade, basically, into 2026 before it even begins to go insolvent. So for a lot of seniors, their number one concern is Medicare going to be there? And by extending that trust fund by basically a decade, you are saying to seniors it's going to be there. Also, it eliminates the rationing or limits some of the rationing that the private insurance companies are already doing every day by saying no more annual caps or lifetime caps, which is part of the way, of course, that insurance companies ration and ration in the worst imaginable cases, right? Which is part of, you know, what insurance is it's a hedging of risk. It's a decision. If I buy fire insurance and then my house never burns down, it wasn't a bad decision to have bought fire insurance. You're buying it based on a probability. So in a health insurance context, if one of the things you're hedging against as a parent or family member or individual is the possibility of something really bad happening, and something really bad happens, and then they just kick you off the insurance. I mean, I hear people all the time who come in and talk about having hit that cap within 18 months of a serious illness. So this is where rationing care occurs, one of the areas, and we've actually eliminated the ability for insurance companies to ration that care. So it actually goes in the opposite direction, and obviously there are no death panels in the bill, and these are things that, I have had a lot of debates, as you mentioned earlier, and a lot of discussions and a lot of stakeholder meetings, and those have been town halls and teletown halls and meetings with doctors and nurses and hospital executives and seniors and church groups and everything else. And, you know, what's interesting is people – there's so much important debate to be having. It's a shame that so much of the air was taken up on things that were just fantastical. And so these are important conversations about how we're going to go forward as we have an aging population and other things. We've put the system on much more solid footing, and we've done it by actually saying we all benefit by getting people more care, not less care, by making sure that people are staying healthier, and if they are sick, that we find out as early as possible because it's just a lot cheaper to deal with the illness at that point.
11:22 here on the Wake Up Call with Congressman Tom Perriello from the 5th District, as we're talking about health care reform law, recently voted into place in March of this year. 11:22 here on the Wake Up Call. Let me give you the weather, because it's the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Cloudy with showers and thunderstorms and possibly even damaging winds and large hail tonight. Highs today 75 to 80, lower 80s in Richmond. Cloudy and showers with storms later, lows in the mid-50s and lower 60s in the Richmond area. Cloudy and showers tomorrow, highs 70 to 75. And right now, it's cloudy across much of the area with that possible winds and hail later. 66 in the Valley, 62 in Lynchburg, 68 in Richmond, 63 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be here on the air today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online, brgtshirts.com. And as the weather gets nicer, you want to hear about Martin Hardware, Charlottesville's headquarters for Weber Grills. From the One Touch Platinum Kettle, the Weber Smoky Mount Slow Cooker, to the Weber Genesis and Summit Grills, it's Weber for all your summer outdoor grilling needs. You can see the full line of Weber grills and accessories, even flavored wood chips, at Martin Hardware, 941 Preston Avenue, even online, Weber.com. Hey, and in the city, delivery is included on Weber Grills at Martin Hardware. All right, back in action with Congressman Tom Perriello from the Virginia 5th District as we talk about health care reform law. If you have a question or a comment, as long as it's polite and on topic, 979-0919, and we realize that the district goes down a little bit. Toll-free line, 877-967-6762. That's 877-967-6762. Kristen will answer the phone and patch you through. I see the local line is already ringing. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Congressman, quick question while we wait to see if the caller is on topic. Are you concerned? Is there any concern about these laws being overwritten, voted out? Because there's certainly this has been a big issue. Elections are coming up. We won't get specifically into yours, but elections are coming up later this year, 2012, 2014. Do you think things might change enough to undo the work that's been done?
Well, I mean, I think just talking about it in political terms, I think the Republicans realized from the beginning that once people had this, they are going to realize they like it in the same way they've liked Medicare and Social Security, and that that's going to undermine them for a long period going forward. You've also seen from the pragmatic standpoint of the Chamber of Commerce and others that they feel like the chance of complete repeal is highly unlikely, and therefore they're going to focus on how to water it down and move things in the direction of being softer on the insurance companies. I think what we'll continue to have this year is a strong debate about this. And I think, you know, my personal opinion is that we have the facts on our side when we go out and we explain this and what's in it, that people like it, they get excited about it. You're always going to have an ideological opposition to this that is that people have every right to feel. But I think for the pragmatists in the middle, the moderates, the folks who are really just wanting to say, hey, is this going to save me money or cost me money? Again, that business owner that finds out they're getting a 35% tax credit on the premiums they're paying, that family that realizes that they're going to be able to keep the child on insurance, the senior seeing that we're extending the life of Medicare, and people say, hey, well, who wants to take that away? So the dynamic flips quite a bit. And you say, well, you know, for those who want to repeal it, what do you have against seniors? Why don't you want them to be able to get cheaper prescription drugs and have a more secure Medicare? And why do you want them to have to pay these copays for their primary care visits? So, you know, I'm glad to be on the side of it that I am. I think it was the right thing to do. And I think, again, more information is our ally in this. And I think that'll play out through the year. But on just purely political terms, I think it would be difficult to see this thing over the core structure of it overturned.
One of the medical procedures that's not covered under the new health care reform law is abortion. Now, I know early on you stated that you weren't going to, correct me if I'm misstating you, but I believe you stated early on you weren't going to support any bill that provided federal funding for abortion. And I understand that there were certainly political reasons not to do so, as well as whatever personal reasons you may have had. But I'm sort of caught up on what medical justification we have for a health care reform law not to cover a very basic and important medical procedure for women's health. And I'd like to hear how the health care reform law will help reduce unwanted pregnancies.
Well, the issue of abortion coverage was certainly one of the one of the most heated aspects of the debate, one where I did take a role. I made the promise to my district early on and often that I would not support a bill that included federal funding for abortions, and the White House made the same promise. I think what you had in that debate was a question of saying, okay, well, how does one do that when we're moving into the territory that is less a government plan, where it's very obvious with Medicaid, for example, you simply can't do it. The Hyde Amendment has been in place for 30 years, and that's sort of been a detente of sorts between the life and choice movement, not saying women cannot get this procedure, but that it will not be covered with federal tax dollars. And there are strong moral arguments for and against that. I understand it, but that's been the line that's drawn. What happens when you move into an area where we're not talking about a government option or a public option, but we're really talking about competition between private insurance? And this is one where I think many in the choice community feel like we have crossed significantly into new territory of limiting even someone's right to buy private insurance with private dollars that would cover abortion, and that could include, of course, complicated pregnancies, really a whole range of things that would go on. Now, the exceptions, of course, for rape, incest, life of the mother are part of the Hyde Amendment and are covered here. What has generally happened in this country is that, women in the statistics on this are are over the map, but the majority of women tend to access abortion services not through their insurance anyway, but through private clinics. So there's the issue of what it means to have insurance coverage for something versus a right to have that procedure. Now, so where do we end up? We ended up in an area that probably could be considered a step back from the choice perspective. There's a very strong barrier to public funding of abortions that's certainly clear in the community health centers. It's clear where people will have to write a second check with their own money for any abortion coverage. On the other hand, there are significant gains for women's health. In fact, in almost every other area but that, there are huge gains. I helped work to make sure pre- and postnatal care is covered. And you want to talk about reducing the number of abortions. If someone is pregnant, they're facing up to $7,500 in costs just for pre-, peri-, and postnatal care. It's also a cost to the system because when people don't get prenatal care, the costs in the NICU can be astronomical. So we're talking about looking at that situation and saying, okay, I'm going to have coverage to carry this baby to term. We're also looking at issues related to adoption credits and a number of other things that are in there that are there to support pregnant women as they make that choice. So you're talking about also getting rid of essentially the idea of being a woman being a pre-existing condition, whether insurance companies can overcharge simply for being a woman, who women will often pay 45% or more extra on their premiums basically for being women. We've gone after that, and that will no longer be the case. So I think there are some really substantial gains for women's health, but I think on the choice issue, this is something where the line has been drawn, whether one agrees with that or not, and it's probably moved from a clear line in the public line to actually blurring into the private insurance sector.
11:31 here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to be here with Congressman Tom Perriello from Virginia's 5th District here at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where April is Trail Running Month. Staff at Blue Ridge can fit you from a selection of over 40 brands of shoes, socks, quick dry shorts and tops, plus hydration packs and backpacking supplies. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville, Lexington Commons, and Chesterfield Town Center in Richmond. Online, brms.com. All right, Congressman, you ready for a phone call?
Let's do it.
And Denise, are you there?
I am.
All right, we have Denise from Free Union.
Hi,
there
Denise.
Hi, thank you, Congressman Perriello. I really appreciate everything you've done for us, and I so regret the abuse you're taking undeservedly. I follow the healthcare debate very closely because I've spent my life in that sector of the economy. I still do not understand what an exchange is. Could you just explain to us a little bit more, what is this exchange thing going to be?
Sure. So there's some things that are going to kick in immediately. A lot of the limitations on insurance companies being able to kick you off the insurance and the lifetime caps, the 26-year-old, a lot of those things are right away. But in 2014, we're going to be establishing this exchange. And basically what it is it's an exchange that's modeled on the way that I get health care through the Federal Employees Exchange, which is you've got a huge block of people to get insured. So every insurance company really wants the business because it's so many people. So for federal employees, I get a booklet that says I can choose between this range of insurance companies, and it's not free. But it is something where, because of the competitive pressure, you're able to get a situation where the patient has a little more control. This is doing the same thing, where we're creating a space where those who are uninsured, underinsured, independent contractors, others who want to come into this exchange will group together and be a big enough pool that the insurance companies really want to fight for the business. So it's really about changing the negotiating power from the insurance companies back to the individual in the business. So what we say is you can come and compete, and it's only private companies competing for this business. There is no public or government option in it. It's just saying to the private insurance companies, you can compete against each other for this big pool. So just think of it basically as switching the negotiating power from all being with the insurance company to being with the individual. And in order to do that, you have to play by basic rules of fairness that include not discriminating against women, not discriminating based on pre-existing conditions, putting some investment in prevention and wellness. And if you think about it, you know, one of the things that worked 40 years ago was if you, you know, just got your first job, say, out of high school, working at a factory or small business, what have you, that insurance company assumed you would probably be working for the same business for 30 or 40 years. Therefore, the way for them to make money was to keep you healthy, because then they wouldn't have to pay for you being sick. When we've moved into the economy of the 90s and the aughts, what you're in is a situation where people go in and out of jobs four or five times in a decade, which means the insurance companies no longer make a profit by keeping you healthy. They just want to make sure you find out you're sick when you're on someone else's insurance. When everybody is in this exchange and everybody's going to have to be covered, we move back to a situation where there's an overall incentive, a capitalist incentive, for keeping people healthy. So the exchange is basically about switching that negotiating power back to the patient, back to the small business owner, where the insurance companies are so interested in the big pool of paying clients that they are willing to play by rules that otherwise they don't have to play by. So I think of it that way, as this sort of ability to get patients and small business owners back into the negotiating position. It starts in 2014. Now, one thing, the first House bill that I supported created a federal exchange, so it was a really big pool of people, and therefore, in my mind, even more leverage. What the Senate came up with that was in the final bill was actually that each state has the right to create its own exchange. So again, those who claim this is this tremendous imposition on states, we've actually handed it to the states to create their own exchange. Part of why I like the federal exchange was it actually opens the door to more interstate competition in the way that we have for federal employees, and I think actually is one of the ideas you hear more associated with conservatives that I think is right. But that competition only works if it's not a race to the bottom. It's actually you've set a floor and you allow people to compete in that context. So we're going to go with the state exchanges, but that's basically what it is. It's helping people pull together as individuals and smaller buyers to have the negotiating power of the big guys.
Would a large employer also be eligible to buy insurance that way, or just small?
Well, for the most part, it's going to be for those having 100 employees or less, with the idea being that the larger employers essentially already have the equivalent of that negotiating power in the market because they're a big enough unit. But that is the sort of thing down the road where if we see the larger companies saying, hey, we really want on this exchange and trying to move things in that direction, we would certainly consider that at the time.
And so an individual could also purchase through that?
That's right. And we also are helping through the tax credits I mentioned for small business. There are also affordability credits for the middle class. And, you know, one of the things that gets lost in this sometimes is again, this idea that it's really been the middle class that's been squeezed. There is Medicaid up to 100%. That's up to 133% of poverty. There are those in severe economic distress. But really, it's the middle class that's been paying more and more in premiums, more and more in out-of-pocket expenses, and that's where we've tried to focus the affordability tax credits.
Thank you.
Denise, thanks for the call. All right, let's see. I have another caller on, but let's hold on just a second. I want to take care of this important business for our underwriters before, so I don't have to interrupt you, Wendy. 11:37 here on the Wake Up Call with Congressman Tom Perriello.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week in The Hook. What started as a desire to humanely deal with a mouse infestation turned tragic for a Crozet family. They hope the mistakes that led to their dog's death can help save other animals and children. And police have confirmed the black T-shirt found outside on a bush at 15th and Grady Avenue did belong to Morgan Harrington. But the shirt was found there, spread flat and face up, nearly a month after the young woman originally disappeared. The Hook tells more. The Hook, a new visit around town every week. And support today also coming from Petite Bebe, a children's and maternity boutique offering everything for babies, children up to 14, and mothers-to-be. Petite Bebe carries sustainable products for kids, including strollers and car seats, clothing, and gift items. They also offer a baby shower registry. That's Petite Bebe, 1st and Water Street in Charlottesville, open Mondays and Saturdays. And for more info, it's PetiteBebe.com. That's just in case I mispronounce it with my Spanish high school for the French word. All right, let's get back to Congressman Perriello here in the studio, along with Sean McCord, who helped put this program together. And let's see, and now we have Wendy from Richmond. Hey, Wendy.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Thank you for hanging on. Question or comment for the congressman?
Well,
A little of each. I work in Richmond as a registered nurse, and I'm having a difficult time as a registered nurse and a taxpayer accepting that the government should have so much intervention with health care reform. I see so many wastes with Medicare and Medicaid management. Sometimes we'll keep someone in the hospital an extra week to get IV antibiotics where they could easily have gone home with a registered nurse like myself visiting them once or twice a day. But Medicare and Medicaid think that it's so much better to keep them there and to have that exponential cost compared to the home health setting. And also, I see so many repeat customers who are non-compliant diabetics. They may have a drug, alcohol, or a nicotine issue or some other issue. And I just find it really hard that our government can adequately, you know, try to put everything into certain categories or dichotomy of, okay, we can do this here, that, there. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I've been trying to read as much as I can about the healthcare reform bill, but as a registered nurse and a taxpayer, I'm just having a difficult time thinking that if our government can't manage its debt and these other facets, how can we trust that this is going to go smoothly?
Well, thanks, Wendy. Couple things on that. First of all, you know, we're not having the government manage it. We're talking about managing competition in the market, but the healthcare itself is being provided under this context by private insurance, not by the government programs. In fact, within the government programs that you're talking about, this is probably the most dramatic effort ever to put quality ahead of quantity and go after the waste, fraud, and abuse. In fact, I find it ironic that you know, many of those who are always complaining that expressing their concerns about waste and fraud and abuse in the program are not the ones that are, you know, saying, hey, well, this is great. Finally, some politicians that have the guts to go after exactly the kinds of abuses that are out there. In fact, experts have estimated that up to 5% can be addressed with waste, fraud, and abuse. The CBO statistics that we have on reducing are based on getting only 20% of that. In other words, we may see even more savings than what we've talked about in the program. And one of the areas is the fact that there are some real advantages to looking at home care. And one of the reasons why a lot of the hospitals and hospital systems have supported this reform is that they feel like the current system has rewarded quantity over quality. And what we're looking at is actually shifting that to looking at measures of quality and performance. In other words, a hospital right now makes more off of bringing you in and spitting you out, bringing you in and spitting you out, than trying to figure out a way to have a medical home for you overall, fix you the first time that you're there. So actually, for I think a lot of the concerns you're seeing, that's exactly why this reform is exciting, is that it's an opportunity to really go after some of those inefficiencies that are there. However, I'll note that Medicare, the overhead for Medicare is about 2 or 3%, whereas for most insurance companies, it's about 30% overhead. So there's some enormous efficiency gains actually in the other direction. So what we want is to make sure that we're going after the abuse that's there, but also with systems like the Carilion system that covers a lot of my district. They're very excited about this idea of moving towards some of these measures that I think will increase quality of care in settings, you know, palliative care, home care, other things that can increase quality at a lower price. So you're actually seeing more of that innovation right now, I think, in the Medicare system in its own way. So, you know, to the first point, we're not actually talking about the government taking over healthcare. We're talking about expanding the private insurance market for hospitals like the one in the clinics that where you may work. You know, part of what's been a problem is we've had this balloon approach where you squeeze here and all the air just goes to the other end of the balloon, because as more and more people are uninsured, people who are on private insurance just have to pay more and more. There are hospitals in my district where only 20-25% of the patients are on private insurance, and they've been essentially asked to carry the cost for everyone else. Well, we're saying that's not fair to people with private insurance. We should have a system that is more balanced in that way. So, you know, I think for the reasons – for the problems that you're seeing, there may be some real progress on the way.
Wendy, hang on a second. Stay with me.
Okay.
Congressman, I have for years, I think I've done this program now for 10 or 11 years. I can't even keep track. And for the entire time, I have been attempting to have pharmaceutical reps come on this program, talk about what they do, how their efforts work, how their daily job functions, and how it affects the insurance market. And all I can see is the incredible cost of most prescriptions. I have insurance, and I would assume, Wendy, I want you to hang on because I want you to participate in this. When I have insurance, so when I go and get my prescription filled for, I suffer from epilepsy, and the the cost of my insurance is $60, but the cost on the ticket is $780. And I think that the pharmaceutical part of the insurance system totally blows this all out of proportion. And Wendy, do you see this on your end with pharmaceutical reps coming into your work, providing free lunches, pens, book packs, everything else with the...
You know what? They don't do that as much anymore. I'll be honest with you. I have friends who have worked in that area for many years. I know people who have lost their jobs. I will tell you that in the past, yes, they did have very inflated budgets, if you will, for such things. And it used to crack me up. There was someone coming by trying to peddle Lipitor, and they're bringing fried chicken from U-Crops. That's kind of entertaining to me. But I will say that there has been a decrease in that. But, yes, I will say there is a lot of greed, I feel, in the pharmaceutical realm. I know that there are programs that they have been trying to promote to help people with lower income. I have in my past worked in certain offices before going into the hospital environment. You know, if we knew of certain patients who had a need, you know, we would try our best to set aside something for them just to help, you know, defray their costs. But I will say, yes, I do believe, you know, throughout a few decades here, there was a lot of a romance, if you will, between pharmaceutical companies and physicians. You know, every time the physician would, you know, stroke a pen and write for this prescription versus another, there would be some benefit. I do agree with that. But I will say, given the state of the economy, that has been greatly decreased.
All right. Thanks for answering that part for me. Because I'm not asking, and Wendy, thanks for the call. I'm not asking for anyone to lose their job, because the people themselves are not doing anything except how what their job requires and entails. But Congressman, what has this new healthcare reform law done to the prescription side of things?
Well, I think part of the context for this is to understand how skewed pricing is. One of the issues that I want to go back and do more work on is more transparency of cost. One of the things that you see on your bill is you always see this astronomical cost that no one actually pays, right?
So the 30 days, $780 for 30 days worth of medication.
Right. So then the private insurance company gets to show you how much they've saved you by being on the insurance. For Medicare and Medicaid, they get to show, the hospital gets to claim the loss of saying we lost all this money. And then for the few people that are paying out of pocket, they tend to end up having to, you know, go bankrupt or whatever, and those are the people that really get caught. So sometimes one of the problems in the system right now is that it's really hard to be able to even say what does this thing cost, because it's not like you can go you get that skewed number. In terms of what we're doing on the drug side, obviously closing the prescription drug donut hole for seniors is very important. Within insurance, part of what we're saying to participate in this exchange is that you have to hit what's called an 85% medical loss ratio, which means 85 cents on every dollar that you're spending on your insurance has to go to actual medical care. So what we're looking at is trying to choke out some of that enormous overhead that's in that system and have people compete within that. And certainly the pharmaceutical is an area that where that's going to be, I think, very much up for grabs. For me, again, I'd like to go back and see us negotiate the drug rates under Medicare, because I think that has an effect on the broader private market as well.
All right, we have another call here. By the way, 979-0919 with Congressman Tom Perriello on the wake-up call. It's the local number, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS for a little further out. And we have Jim from Albemarle. Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you for waiting for me and my commentary. Questions?
Yes. Thank you, Congressman, for taking my question. Most of the 30 million of the uninsured that Congress attempted to provide or to ensure ways to provide insurance for, a lot of those folks are young people who are in the healthiest stage of their lives. And as a part of the overall payment for the health bill, $500 billion was cut out of the Medicare system, which are people at the time of their life when they need medical help the most. Can you kind of square that up for me and help me to understand why we would take $500 billion out of the people who need health care more and insure people who are at the time of least need in their lifetime?
Well, first of all, in terms of the $500 billion on Medicare, what we're going after, the vast majority of that savings is blatant gouging and overpayment of the private insurance companies within Medicare Advantage. They are going to continue to exist and do it, but they were getting 14 to 20% overpayments. They came in and said, we can outcompete the Medicare system, and what they instead were doing was pulling hundreds of billions of dollars out of the system. So we're going after that to make sure that the money seniors paid in and are entitled to is getting spent on seniors and not on these insurance companies that are gouging the system. So I think this is actually about protecting the promise we made to our seniors, not to mention the Medicare Trust Fund was set to begin going insolvent in 2017, i.e. that would be the year we start to bring in less than we spend. We've moved that down to 2026, and I believe it'll extend further based on the savings. So we are actually investing this in our seniors, making sure that Medicare is shored up, making sure that the hard-earned dollars that seniors have paid in are not going into companies that are gouging the system. So that's the majority of it, not to mention there are seniors and others who are abusing the system, and we want to make sure that the seniors who've worked hard and played by the rules get what they're entitled to. So it's absolutely that, and that's why we're closing the prescription drug donut hole for seniors. It's why seniors will not have any copayments for wellness and prevention visits starting next year. These are important protections for our seniors. We want people to get care, get it earlier. We're also significantly expanding our community health centers where a lot of seniors get care, being open more weekends, more evenings, more specialty care available, particularly for our seniors in rural settings. With the young people, arguably the money is going in the other direction, which is that they're paying into a system so that there is more available there for seniors and others rather than taking it out of the system. Obviously, young people tend to be healthy, but if you do, you are unfortunate enough to develop a disease or have a bad injury with a young person, you might be talking about 50 or 60 years of expenses in the system. So what we're saying is that you may feel immortal, but in fact, horrible things happen, and we want to make sure people are in that system. So I think seniors definitely win under this in terms of making sure that the Medicare system is on much more solid ground, that they're getting the kind of quality preventative care that they need. They're not getting stuck in the donut hole. We're also doing a 10% bonus payment to doctors that participate in Medicare so that we make sure that doctors stay with the system, that younger doctors see this as a field to go into. And I know that's very important to a lot of our seniors as well.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, thank you for the call. 11:52 here on the Wake Up Call. Rick Moore, Sean McCord, Congressman Tom Perriello. And the phone lines are open, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. We are reaching from Harrisonburg to Richmond, Lexington down to Lynchburg, Amherst. And let me take a moment and thank Salad Creations for allowing us to do all this. Salad Creations is now at 865 Port Republic Road in Harrisonburg. You can choose from a variety of vegetarian salads or those made with chicken, turkey, and seafood. Create your own from four varieties of greens, 40 toppings, and over a dozen dressings. Delivery and catering are available, too, at Salad Creations. Again, 865 Port Republic Road in Harrisonburg and online saladcreations.net. I just got a message. Drew Thompson will be here a minute or two late, so we'll trick the congressman into staying until about 12:03, and that'll be your first Les Temps Perdue song. Fire away, Sean McCord. You got a question for the congressman?
Well, I do. You talked about, Tom, you talked about the private insurers have to play by the rules in order to play in this arena in the first place. But private insurers, and forgive me if this sounds a little cynical, but private insurers aren't out there to insure as many people as possible. They're out there to make money. So even with all the rules that you're putting in place, I can't help but believe that they're going to try to find loopholes. So how confident are you that in the wording of the healthcare reform law that nobody will ever be turned down again for insurance, because they have a pre-existing condition. I have heard interpretations said, no, this just applies to children. And other people have said, no, this applies to everybody. So I'd like some clarification for that. And even if you take that off the table, is there anything to prevent a private health insurance company from turning somebody down for insurance just because they want to without having to state a reason?
Well, there are three levels, I think, of that question. First, this issue that they're there to make money. That is their fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders. So you solve this problem in one of two ways. You either create an alternative that is not, that does not exist primarily to make money, which is essentially how Medicare outcompetes the private sector when it comes to that sector. Or you figure out ways to create a system where the best way for a company to make money is by doing the right thing. And what we've been trying to do, I think, in both the clean energy sector and the healthcare sector is to make it profitable to be innovating, to be providing quality, et cetera. So in a situation where you can make money by kicking people off insurance, insurance companies will find a way to kick people off their insurance. If you eliminate that and one company can't outcompete another in that way, they adjust to that reality, and I have no doubt they will find a way to make money and make a lot of money. But in this case, by being better at doing the right thing, not figuring out the shadiest practices. So that those are your two choices. You create a non-profit competitor, or you create a way that they can basically make money by doing the right thing, and that's what we've tried to do. And as you've noticed, some, including Ron Paul, feel like, if anything, this is too close to the corporatist end and not the socialist end. It is very much of an engagement with the private sector to say, we believe you can help solve the problem, but in order to do that, we're going to set these rules of fairness. You take pre-existing conditions. So immediately they cannot discriminate for children with pre-existing conditions. In 2014, that applies to all Americans. In the meantime, we are setting up an interim risk pool where early retirees and people with pre-existing conditions will be able to come together to get insurance that kicks in about 45 days. So there's immediate protection for kids. Adults have a place to go, and starting in 2014, that'll apply to everybody. And their deal was basically, look, you know, if this is part of the connection between the personal responsibility requirement and this, which is if people aren't required to get insurance or have a choice between the mandate or the penalty, then people can just wait till they get really sick. And I think that is actually one of the more reasonable arguments that the insurance companies, the health insurance companies, have made in this. So, you know, there is this issue. The pre-existing condition discrimination is ended. These are rules. As you saw the day or the week after we signed this into law, the insurance companies tried a bunch of loopholes, and the president said, look, you know, you lost and the people won, get used to it. And you saw them back off of that. So I really do think you sense that the power has shifted back to patients and small business owners and individuals, but that's going to have to be something we are vigilant about keeping an eye on.
All right, 11:57 here on the wake-up call. I see Drew Thompson floating around out there, so quick reminder that in just a few moments, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Perdue. And your fridge says that your thing here at NRN, that's The Time's Gone By, which is 80s and 90s alternative tunes. So be here for it next. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. We also want to let you know this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Rick Moore, Sean McCord joining me today, Congressman Tom Perriello from Virginia's 5th District. Congressman, we just have 2 minutes left. We got this call about a half an hour ago, and I wanted to finish with it because I think this sort of represents what many people, it's a very confusing topic, and this seems to be the key factor to many folks. Dave from Fluvanna called and says, what does the bill do to contain spiraling costs? Because I think for many people, that's it. The costs are going up. I don't want to spend as much money. What does this bill do to contain spiraling costs? Thanks, Dave. I think that's a great question.
Well, independent experts have looked at it and said a middle-class family of four is going to save about $4,000 a year because you're going to have more competition, you're going to have more investment in prevention and wellness, you're going to have limits on some of the out-of-pocket expenses that can occur, and you're going to have this more competitive market where the negotiating power is back with the individuals. So in the short term, it's going to be those direct caps on some of the out-of-pocket expenses. In the medium term, it's the competition. And in the longer term, it's by actually being a healthier society, by investing more in wellness and prevention. Within the Medicare system and the Medicaid system, which are significant portions of the budget expenses to taxpayers as opposed to that out-of-pocket at the kitchen table. We are again looking at significant going after waste, fraud, and abuse. A huge amount is that these Medicare Advantage companies came in and said we can do it better, and in fact they were overcharging by nearly 20%, costing hundreds of billions of dollars to the system. What we say is if you come in under budget, you get a bonus. If you come in over budget, you get a penalty. And so there's hundreds of billions that the Bush administration thought we were going to save that actually turned into money being stolen from seniors, and we're going after that. So we are going after the people abusing the system. The other savings, of course, is for people who already have insurance. They pay about $1,500 more every year right now on a hidden tax that covers the cost of the uninsured. The hospitals basically shift the cost from people who can't pay to those with private insurance. This is bringing everyone into the insurance market, which takes that premium pressure off of the people who currently have private insurance. So that's up to $1,500 a year. So basically right now the system we had was if you're lucky enough to have private insurance, you are paying the cost of the uninsured and you're paying for them to go to the emergency room and get the most expensive care possible. What this is going to do is say to those folks they have to get insurance, everyone's got to take some responsibility, but in return you're going to get primary care, prevention, wellness care, which should be cheaper on the system over time. In addition, we're saying to the insurance companies, you're going to have to, you know, compete in a market that you've enjoyed, basically a monopoly. You're going to have to compete. And when competition happens, quality goes up and price goes down.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sean McCord, thank you for putting this show together today. Congressman, I would like to invite you back in the future. Maybe we can talk about financial reform, since that seems to be what everyone's chatting about now.
Well, if you want your viewers to go back to sleep, we can do that. But no, in all seriousness, it is one of the most important topics we could possibly discuss, and we're keeping a keen eye on whether the Senate ends up just being full of loopholes or whether it's the real deal.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Shout out to Congressman Tom Perriello for taking time to visit the wake-up call today. All right, everybody. Drew Thompson up next for Les Thames Perdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.